Muy buenos días, bienvenidas y bienvenidos a esta audiencia pública sobre el seguimiento del cumplimiento de las medidas cautelares en el caso de las personas detenidas en la Bahía de Guantánamo, solicitada por el Centro de Derechos Constitucionales, por la Clínica de Derechos Humanos de la American University y por CEGIL. Contamos también con la participación de representantes del gobierno de los Estados Unidos. Tenemos una hora para esta audiencia. Comenzaría, como son las reglas, los peticionarios de la audiencia por 20 minutos, luego los representantes del gobierno de Estados Unidos, 20 minutos, y los colegas comisionados que me acompañan, el doctor Víctor Abramovich, vicepresidente de la Comisión Interamericana, y el doctor Claire Robert, expresidente de la Comisión, con el secretario ejecutivo y personal de la Secretaría. Vamos a hacer preguntas, si lo estimamos conveniente, los 20 minutos restantes. Por favor, tienen la palabra los peticionarios.
Muchas gracias, señor presidente. Haremos la presentación en inglés. Honorable members of the Inter-American Commission, distinguished representatives of the United States government. We are grateful for the opportunity today to discuss the Commission's precautionary measures in favor of those detained by the United States at Guantanamo Bay. My name is Michael Camilleri. I'm an attorney with the Center for Justice and International Law, CEHIL. Accompanying me at the table are Emmy McLean and Susan Hu of the Center for Constitutional Rights, along with my CEHIL colleague, Viviana Kisicevich. Ms. McLean and I will be giving the initial presentation, and we are also submitting a report to the Commission that more fully explores the issues that will be discussed. As we speak, more than 350 people, continue to be arbitrarily and indefinitely detained by the United States at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Only two of these detainees are currently charged with a crime. Conditions of detention at Guantanamo Bay are often inhuman and degrading, and in some cases rise to the level of torture. Even those who are cleared for release face uncertain futures. Some are returned to countries where they are likely to be tortured. Others simply linger in indefinite detention because the U.S. has failed to find a country that will accept them. Little of this information is new to this Honorable Commission. Soon after the U.S. began transferring detainees to Guantanamo Bay in 2002, the Commission first issued precautionary measures in favor of the detainees. The measures were subsequently expanded, so that in 2005, the Commission requested that the United States, one, effectively determine the legal status of detainees via a competent tribunal, two, prohibit and prosecute torture and other mistreatment, and three, prevent the transfer of detainees to countries in which they may risk torture or other cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment. Furthermore, in July of last year, the Commission urged the United States to close the Guantanamo facility without delay. As Ms. McLean will discuss, the U.S. has failed to comply with any aspect of the Commission's precautionary measures.
Perdón la interrupción. Las traductoras quieren que hable más despacio, por favor.
Bueno, gracias. The U.S. has failed to comply with any aspects of the Commission's precautionary measures, which is not to say that the situation at Guantanamo Bay remains unchanged. Domestic judicial decisions have forced the U.S. government to acknowledge that detainees do not exist in a legal black hole, as the government had initially alleged. Furthermore, international pressure has led dozens of detainees to be released from Guantanamo Bay, though, as mentioned, close to 400 remain, and in the past year, almost 20 new detainees have been transferred to Guantanamo Bay. Finally, the U.S. has modified the legal framework applicable to detainees, as we will discuss. Given this fluid situation, it is essential that the Commission maintain its oversight of the situation at Guantanamo, reiterating and developing its precautionary measures to respond to ongoing and emerging threats of irreparable harm to detainees' rights. The Commission's precautionary measures also serve as an important check on the U.S. government's attempts to legitimize narrow interpretations of nations' obligations under international human rights law. Before Ms. McLean discusses the U.S.'s continuing violation of the precautionary measures, I would like to briefly summarize recent developments in the legal framework applicable to detainees. Despite decisions by the U.S. Supreme Court upholding the right of Guantanamo detainees to pursue habeas corpus claims in federal court, the U.S. government has recently taken steps to curtail detainees' legal rights. The U.S. Congress passed the Detainee Treatment Act in 2005, and the Military Commissions Act, or MCA, in 2006, subsequent to landmark decisions in the U.S. Supreme Court upholding detainees' rights. These two laws limit the rights of Guantanamo detainees to bring legal challenges, including habeas petitions, in federal courts. Indeed, the courts have in recent months ruled that they are unable to consider habeas claims by detainees because of the MCA's jurisdiction-stripping provision. At this point, then, the United States has completely denied detainees access to an independent judicial review of their detention. In this way and others that Ms. McLean will now discuss, the Military Commissions Act aggravates the risk of irreparable harm to the fundamental rights of those held at Guantanamo Bay.
Despite clear and persuasive iterations by the Commission that the United States adhere to its international legal obligations with regard to the men detained at Guantanamo, the United States has either refused to do so or made bald rhetorical claims of adherence inconsistent with policy and practice. Indeed, in some areas in which the Commission has issued precautionary measures to prevent irreparable harm, the United States has committed even more egregious violations. I will focus on three areas in which the Commission issued precautionary measures nearly 2 years ago that the United States has not complied with, and where the United States has even exacerbated the violations, in part because of the devastating effects of recent legislation and particular policy choices. First, the Commission in October 2005 requested that the United States provide fair and effective status determinations by competent tribunals. Instead, more than 5.5 years after the establishment of Guantanamo Bay Naval Base as an offshore prison camp, the legal status of the detainees at Guantanamo remains uncertain. Only two of Guantanamo's current detainees have been charged under new military commission regulations, and even their status remains uncertain, as judges held that they did not have proper jurisdiction to consider these cases. For the remaining more than 350 detainees, the U.S. continues to assert that they are properly detained in an armed conflict with no foreseeable end and with their rights largely a matter of executive discretion. The U.S. has not committed to charge or release others and has asserted that it is within its right to indefinitely detain detainees as a continuing security threat. The United States continues to rely on one-sided administrative proceedings despite their patent procedural irregularities. The habeas corpus proceedings, which would be competent tribunals for status determination and which have been the subject of litigation since Guantanamo's current inception, have faced constant obstructionist tactics on the part of the government. The writ of habeas corpus has been recognized by this commission as potentially a rapid, effective, and relatively simple remedy to determine whether there is a factual and legal basis for ongoing detention. Yet there has not been a single habeas hearing in more than 5 years of detention, and more than 3 years after the Supreme Court held that federal courts in the United States had jurisdiction to consider the habeas petitions of Guantanamo detainees. The Military Commissions Act, legislation that was passed in October of 2006, has worsened the climate of uncertainty for the detainees that remain at Guantanamo. The legislation limits independent judicial review of indefinite detention of non-citizens classified as unlawful enemy combatants or those even awaiting determination about their classification. Indeed, subsequent to this legislation, some judges have dismissed the long-standing habeas petitions of a number of detainees. In place of habeas, the legislation substitutes an extraordinary limited mechanism to review the determinations made by procedurally inadequate administrative boards at Guantanamo. Detainees are thus left without any fair or impartial review procedure to challenge the lawfulness of their detention. Furthermore, the legislation defines an expansive subclass of detainees as unlawful enemy combatants. This concept, non-existent in international law, conflates several categories of detainees who are entitled to various protections within international human rights and humanitarian law. However, the United States created the term, conflated the categories, and proceeded to statutorily deny the detainees of the rights to which they're entitled. The term, as it's statutorily defined for the first time in the Military Commissions Act, seemingly without regard to generations of international humanitarian and human rights law, includes individuals who would be classified as privileged combatants with prisoner of war status under the Geneva Conventions, others who would be classified as non-combatants, not directly involved in the hostilities, and still others captured outside of any zone of active combat and therefore not governed by the Geneva Conventions, but entitled to the protection of the full panoply of human rights instruments. The legislation also ratifies the existing executive determinations of enemy combatant status and provides for the President or Secretary of Defense to establish other tribunals with undefined procedures and presumptively competent to unilaterally label individuals unlawful enemy combatants. This fully disregards judicial safeguards to ensure that fair status determination emanates from a competent court or tribunal as opposed to a political authority. At this stage, everyone detained at Guantanamo is being subjected to prolonged and arbitrary deprivation of the right to personal liberty, as acknowledged by the joint report of the United Nations rapporteurs. Instead of releasing detainees or, where justified, conducting fair tribunals consistent with proper status determinations, the United States has further entrenched a system in which their status is left at the unfettered discretion of the executive, as previously noted by this distinguished commission. Second, the commission also requested in 2005 that the United States uphold its obligation to prohibit torture and cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment, and to investigate and prosecute torture and cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment where it occurs. Instead, the United States has created a system in which detainees who remain at Guantanamo are exposed to profound psychological abuses and, in some cases, continuing physical abuses which can amount to torture, and a system in which perpetrators of torture and cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment are decreasingly likely to face prosecution. The situation within Guantanamo for the men who continue to be detained there is bleak. Four men have died in Guantanamo since it's opened, purportedly by suicide, though the Department of Defense has yet to release the results of their investigation into the deaths, even to the families of the deceased, or to permit an independent investigation to be conducted. Some detainees have been subjected to abusive force-feeding in restraint chairs. Some of the procedures used have been found by the UN special mandate holders to, quote, definitely amount to torture. And early this year, many detainees were transferred from facilities that offered some communal interaction to a super maximum security facility in which detainees are held in complete solitary confinement. There, detainees are left for virtually the entire day, day after day, in barren cells. These men have never been charged, and the administration admits that it does not intend to charge the overwhelming majority of them. And indeed, for many, has no reason to continue to charge or continue to hold them. Many, in fact, have been cleared for release. One detainee said to a lawyer visiting him only weeks after he had arrived at the super maximum security facility, "Tell my wife to remarry. She should consider me dead." This man is a refugee who'd fled persecution seeking safety abroad. He was cleared for release long ago. Like many at Guantanamo, his crime was being a foreigner in the wrong place at the wrong time, fleeing from a war at the same time that the United States was offering a sizable bounty for alleged fighters. The recently passed Military Commissions Act also has negative ramifications for the U.S. adherence to its obligations to prohibit torture and cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment and to investigate and punish perpetrators. The legislation's establishment of narrow definitions of these terms serves to both permit statements obtained under torture to be admitted in military commissions and also to limit the accountability for violations. Further, the legislation explicitly confers retroactive immunity for certain illegal acts where those actions were officially authorized. This effectively permits the president's command and misrepresentation of the law to exonerate those who commit violations. Third, the commission in 2005 requested the United States to prevent the transfer of detainees to countries where there exists substantial grounds for fear of torture or mistreatment, as required by their non-refoulement obligations. The commission required the U.S. to provide adequate, individualized examination of circumstances to prevent refoulement. Instead, the United States has continued to rely on diplomatic assurances from notorious rights-abusing regimes, even where particularized fear of torture exists. The government has repatriated 29 detainees to Jordan, Libya, Morocco, Russia, Tunisia, and Uzbekistan, despite heightened and individualized risks to the detainees who were transferred to these countries. In the last 2 months alone, the U.S. has transferred detainees to Libya and Tunisia. The U.S. has also aggressively challenged the judicial oversight of these transfers with greater success subsequent to the Military Commissions Act because of the court-stripping provisions that exist within the Military Commissions Act. There are now nearly 48 detainees at Guantanamo who cannot be transferred to their home countries for fear of torture. Some 25 have even been cleared for release by the United States government. However, they face either involuntary transfers or continued prolonged and arbitrary deprivation of liberty because no country, including the United States, has accepted the burden-sharing obligations to accept them as refugees. So despite continued expressions of concern within the United States and outside the United States, and statements by the United States that they adhere to their international obligations in each of these areas, all evidence suggests that the United States has consistently violated their international legal obligations. In each of these areas, the Military Commissions Act has exacerbated the conditions for the detainees, leaving them at greater risk of irreparable harm.
My colleague has discussed the ongoing failure of the United States government to adequately define the legal status of detainees at Guantanamo Bay. The Commission has also insisted on adequate definition of legal status since its first precautionary measures in 2002. One of the most significant consequences of the failure to adequately define status is its effect on the fundamental fair trial rights of detainees. Even the U.S. government has stated that no more than a quarter of the Guantanamo detainees will ever be brought to trial. The remaining 300 face indefinite arbitrary detention without trial and without charge. Those who are eventually tried before the military commissions created by the Military Commissions Act will without exception be subject to proceedings that do not comply with basic fair trial guarantees under human rights and international humanitarian law. In particular, the long-established jurisprudence of the Inter-American system holds that the jurisdiction of military courts should be restricted to trying members of the military for crimes related to military service and discipline. As mentioned earlier, the unlawful enemy combatant concept developed unilaterally by the United States includes those who do not fall within the purview of the Geneva Conventions. These detainees, captured in places such as Thailand, the UAE, Bosnia, Mauritania, Zambia, Indonesia, the Gambia, and Egypt, where there was clearly no armed conflict, enjoy the full protection of international human rights instruments. As such, making them subject to trial by military commission creates a clear and undeniable risk of irreparable harm to their right to be tried by an independent and impartial tribunal. The Geneva Conventions do provide for privileged and unprivileged combatants to be tried before military courts. However, the failure of the United States to adequately define detainees' status makes it impossible to know which of the detainees can and cannot be properly be tried before such courts. In addition, and even with regard to those who may be appropriately subject to military jurisdiction, the particular military commissions created by the MCA do not comply with fundamental due process guarantees. In particular, these commissions violate detainees' rights to be promptly informed of the charges against them and to be tried within a reasonable time, in public, and in their presence. The military commissions further violate detainees' right to prepare an adequate defense, insofar as they deny the accused access to evidence and witnesses, while allowing the government to present evidence obtained through coercion. Perhaps most egregious is the fact that even if detainees somehow overcome these myriad fair trial violations and prove their innocence before military commissions, the United States is not obliged to release them. Instead, the acquitted person may simply be returned to a situation of arbitrary and indefinite detention. Based on these considerations regarding military commissions, as well as my colleague's discussion of the U.S.'s ongoing and aggravated violation of the Commission's precautionary measures, petitioners respectfully submit the following recommendations to the Honorable Commission. These are developed more fully in the written submission that we will give to the Commission. First, we ask that the Commission reiterate and expand its precautionary measures in the following way. First, by requesting that the United States close the Guantanamo facility without delay, thus marking a new policy of complying fully with human rights and international humanitarian law obligations in its treatment of detainees. second, by ending the arbitrary and indefinite detention of detainees at Guantanamo Bay. As the recent UN special mandate holders report establishes, this requires either trying detainees in accordance with their properly determined legal status or releasing them. Third, by requesting that the United States government guarantee the fair trial rights of Guantanamo detainees. Again, this requires properly defining legal status and limiting the use of military tribunals in accordance with the jurisprudence of the Inter-American system. Fourth, by requesting that the United States fully comply with its obligation to prevent and punish torture and other cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment. This includes improving the detention conditions in which Guantanamo detainees are held. It also includes prohibiting the use in any legal proceeding of statements obtained through torture or mistreatment. And finally, by requesting the U.S. fully honor its non-refoulement obligations. The United States should ensure that detainees are not transferred or removed to countries where there would be a significant danger of being subjected to torture or other mistreatment. Furthermore, when detainees cannot be returned to their home countries, the U.S. should promptly find an adequate third country or admit them to reside in the United States. In addition to these precautionary measures, we ask that the Commission encourage the member states of the OAS to accept in their territory Guantanamo Bay detainees who have been cleared for release but who cannot be returned to their home countries. Thank you.
Muy bien, muchas gracias y gracias además por limitarse exactamente a los 20 minutos concedidos. Tiene la palabra por igual tiempo los representantes del gobierno de Estados Unidos.
Good morning and thank you, distinguished commissioners, and thank you to the petitioners, Sahil, the Center for Constitutional Rights at American University. Distinguished commissioners, as this is the first hearing involving the United States during this 128th period of sessions of the Commission, please allow me to begin by reiterating our strong support for the Commission. U.S. support stems from faith in the Commission's unique forum and its commitment to the protection of human rights and the promotion of democracy. We stand firmly in favor of the integrity and the independence that it has shown. Promotion of respect for human rights, as embodied in the American Declaration on the Rights and Duties of Man, is a cornerstone of global U.S. policy. These principles are echoed in the Inter-American Democratic Charter, which also states that democracy is a condition for the full and effective enjoyment of human rights and fundamental freedoms. The United States contributes $800,000 annually to the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights, including funds for the Special Rapporteurs for Freedom of Expression, the Rights of Women, and Human Rights Defenders. Now, with respect to the precautionary measures under consideration today, the United States informed the Commission on the occasion of the Commission's last hearing in October 2005 that we are constrained to defer further formal participation in these proceedings until the requirement of exhaustion of domestic remedies has been satisfied. This requirement has not yet been satisfied, as ongoing developments in the United States legal system, including several military commission proceedings and the Supreme Court's June 29th order granting certiorari in the cases of Bomodiene versus Bush and Al-Oda versus the United States clearly illustrate. While we recognize that there is a divergence of views between the Commission and the United States on the applicability of the requirement of exhaustion of domestic remedies to precautionary measures, in our view, the requirement is essential in cases like the present one, where there is also no underlying petition and where the proceedings have already lasted for a considerable amount of time. Finally, I would like to state for the record my delegation's longstanding objection to the Commission's authority to request precautionary measures with respect to non-states parties to the American Convention on Human Rights. In light of these considerations, and as we have advised this Honorable Commission, presentation of the petitioners and any observations you might have today, I will not be in a position to engage in further I'm sorry. In light of these considerations, while my delegation is prepared to listen to the presentation of the petitioners and to any observations and questions you might have today, we will not be in a position to engage in further substantive discussions. Thank you very much.
Muy bien, muchas gracias. Esto nos permite un poco más de tiempo. La comisión necesita un poco de tiempo en esta audiencia, aun cuando se ha planteado de parte de los representantes del gobierno de Estados Unidos que no pueden entrar en cuestiones de fondo, pero la comisión desea dejar planteado a los representantes del gobierno de Estados Unidos y, por supuesto, a los peticionarios las inquietudes, las preguntas que, si no las pueden contestar este día, la comisión esperaría que a la brevedad posible el gobierno de Estados Unidos traslade las respuestas a la comisión, dado que han reafirmado acá, y no lo dudamos, el apoyo del gobierno de Estados Unidos a la Comisión Interamericana, el apoyo financiero que agradecemos mucho y que también viene de otros países, y eso nos permite trabajar eficazmente. Agradecemos también el reconocimiento del trabajo que hace la Comisión en favor de la protección de los derechos humanos, de la democracia, y que se nos califica como un ente independiente en el marco del sistema. Eso, ese reconocimiento de ustedes y de otros estados y de la comunidad interamericana fortalece a la Comisión, pero la Comisión esperaría tanto del gobierno de los Estados Unidos como de cualquier otro estado miembro, y no solo estado parte de la Convención Americana, un apoyo que vaya mucho, pero mucho más allá del apoyo financiero, y que se concretice en el cumplimiento no solo de las obligaciones que están consignadas en los instrumentos de derechos humanos del sistema interamericano, aplicables a estados no ratificantes de la Convención Americana, como es el caso de Estados Unidos, y que se aplica, como a otros pocos estados en el continente, la Declaración Americana y la Carta de la OEA, así como el Estatuto de la Comisión Interamericana, que se ciñan a el cumplimiento de esas obligaciones como estados miembros en materia de derechos humanos, y que ese apoyo que han reiterado, que le dan a la Comisión Interamericana, se refleje precisamente en el cumplimiento de esas obligaciones en materia de derechos humanos. En otras audiencias en las que yo he participado, porque también tengo interés en este tema por ser relator para personas privadas de libertad en las Américas, de parte de la Comisión Interamericana, se ha discutido este tema con el gobierno de Estados Unidos sobre el cuestionamiento que el gobierno hace de la falta de agotamiento de recursos internos en caso de medidas cautelares, cuestión que ningún estado del continente lo plantea, y por supuesto ustedes tienen todo el derecho de hacerlo, aun cuando para nosotros no tiene fundamento jurídico y no refleja esa decisión de apoyo a la Comisión Interamericana. Tampoco los estados, salvo rarísimas excepciones, cuestionan la obligatoriedad de las medidas cautelares. Y esto, en definitiva, y lo estoy planteando como una reafirmación de la Comisión Interamericana, porque es nuestra interpretación como un órgano independiente del sistema, tiene su base fundamentalmente en las normas constitucionales de la OEA, es decir, en la Carta de la OEA. Si nos queremos referir a instrumentos jurídicamente vinculantes que rigen para los 34 estados miembros del continente, incluido el gobierno y el Estado de los Estados Unidos de América. La Carta de la OEA es muy clara en su artículo 106, cuando plantea que la labor y el mandato fundamental que todos los estados de la OEA le han brindado y le confieren a la Comisión Interamericana es la tarea de observancia y defensa de los derechos humanos en todo el continente. Esto implica, desarrollado por el Estatuto, la Convención y el Reglamento de la Comisión Interamericana, que tenemos amplias facultades de monitorear, de supervisar y de observar cualquier tipo de situación vinculada a cualquier persona, independientemente de su nacionalidad, sea en periodos de paz, de normalidad constitucional, de estado de excepción, de conflictos armados o de cualquier otro tipo de situación que se identifique de cualquier manera por los gobiernos. Ese mandato amplio conferido por los estados nos permite tomar medidas cautelares frente a situaciones de extrema gravedad y urgencia, y con el fin fundamental de evitar daños irreparables a los derechos fundamentales de las personas. Dicho esto, en mi calidad de presidente de la mesa y de presidente de la comisión, sin perjuicio de que mis colegas Claire Robert y Víctor Abramovich puedan hacer algunas preguntas, yo tengo algunas preguntas también para los peticionarios y para representantes del ilustrado gobierno de los Estados Unidos. Se ha hablado en esta audiencia y estamos informados del calificativo de la figura del combatiente enemigo ilegal. catalogado así por la ley de comisiones militares, aprobada después del caso Hamdan, establecida firmemente por la jurisprudencia de la Corte Suprema de Estados Unidos. Yo quisiera en primer lugar preguntar cuál es el estatus jurídico de esta figura creada por la legislación interna y, consecuentemente, cuál es el régimen jurídico aplicable hoy en día, en este momento, a las personas privadas de libertad en Guantánamo, que ascienden, según los peticionarios, a 350 personas. No tengo duda, porque estamos informados, que se aplica la ley de comisiones militares, pero mi pregunta concreta es: ¿el gobierno de Estados Unidos está aplicando el derecho internacional humanitario en este caso? ¿Está aplicando el derecho internacional de los derechos humanos que está obligado a aplicar en situaciones como la que se examina? ¿Ha hecho caso omiso a la jurisprudencia de la Corte Suprema de Justicia de los Estados Unidos en el caso Hamdan? Y fundamentalmente quiero preguntar, ¿qué pasa con la cuarta enmienda de la Constitución de Estados Unidos, la principal norma que rige al Estado de que se trata, cuando desde hace más de dos siglos, ha establecido y es un aporte a la justicia y a el desarrollo normativo del mundo, cuando crea el debido proceso y positivo el debido proceso por primera vez en el mundo y establece, cito comillas, la cuarta enmienda de la Constitución: a nadie se le puede privar de su vida o de su libertad sin el debido proceso judicial? ¿Cuál es entonces el régimen jurídico que se aplica? ¿Se ignora la cuarta enmienda? ¿Se ignora la declaración americana? ¿Se ignora las obligaciones de los Estados Unidos contraídas como Estado miembro de la OEA en materia de derechos humanos? ¿Se ignora la obligatoriedad que todos los Estados miembros tienen de acatar las recomendaciones de la Comisión Interamericana en casos extremadamente graves, casos de tortura como los que estamos discutiendo, y que tiene facultad la Comisión de pedir medidas? Y en este sentido, quiero también al gobierno de Estados Unidos, por medio de sus ilustres representantes, preguntarles qué medidas han adoptado después de la resolución 1 del año 2006 que adoptó la Comisión Interamericana en la sesión extraordinaria celebrada en Guatemala en julio del año pasado, cuando adoptó tres resoluciones. La primera de ellas exhortó al gobierno de Estados Unidos a clausurar la prisión de Guantánamo. En segundo lugar, a tomar medidas para investigar y sancionar las informaciones y denuncias que hemos tenido nosotros de la práctica de la tortura, que no hemos podido corroborar porque no hemos podido visitar la isla y Guantánamo. Y la tercera medida, exhortó en esa resolución la Comisión a que el gobierno de Estados Unidos tomara medidas para garantizar procesos justos y una justicia independiente e imparcial. A los peticionarios, quisiera preguntarles, dado que nos han estado brindando información más o menos precisa, 350 presos en la actualidad, solamente dos acusados, 29 repatriados a varios países. La pregunta es, ¿cuál es la fuente de información que ustedes tienen, dado de que sabemos que hay una restricción, por supuesto razonable, no queremos cuestionarla, de acceso a la bahía de Guantánamo? Y esto tiene relación, y quiero aprovechar para decirlo, dado que esta es una audiencia pública y estamos formalmente frente a representantes del gobierno de Estados Unidos, del interés de la Comisión Interamericana de formalizar en el breve plazo, en los próximos días, con el Departamento de Estado, una solicitud de anuencia para visitar la prisión de Guantánamo por la Comisión Interamericana. Estamos preparando ya una comunicación formal que debo firmar como presidente para enviar a la señora Condoleezza Rice, solicitándole, como lo hacemos con los demás estados, porque tenemos esa facultad otorgada por los mismos estados para formalizar este pedido. Y agregaría, dado que también tenemos tiempo, aun cuando no haya posibilidad de contestar ahora, pero sí queremos plantearlo esto, queremos solicitar a las partes, primero al Estado y luego a los peticionarios, sobre un presunto suicidio que sucedió en uno de los detenidos en el campamento 5 de Guantánamo, el cual fuera reportado en la prensa el 30 de mayo del año 2007. Y en particular, quisiéramos información que nos aclare sobre las medidas adoptadas para investigar debidamente y esclarecer esta situación identificada preliminarmente como suicidio. También solicitar información a las partes primero al Estado y luego a los peticionarios sobre la situación de las personas, que se dice son alrededor de unos 80 personas, respecto de las cuales se ha establecido que no existe motivo alguno para su detención en la actualidad y que aún permanecen detenidas en Guantánamo. Quiero darles la palabra a mis colegas, primero al vicepresidente de la Comisión, Víctor Abramovich, y luego al comisionado Claire Robert.
Creo que hay ya varias preguntas para contestar. Solamente una agregaría las que formuló el presidente y tiene que ver con el alcance que tiene actualmente el recurso de habeas corpus a partir de la decisión de la ley de comisiones militares. O sea, ¿en qué medida el presidente de la Corte de Handan versus Ramfell en relación con habeas corpus ante tribunales federales sigue vigente en función de la nueva ley de comisiones militares y cuál es el alcance concreto que tiene el recurso, tanto para el Estado como para los peticionarios?
Thank you very much. I certainly would like to thank the Center for Constitutional Rights, Washington College of Law, and C. Hill for the presentations. The questions I have, Mr. President, would have been mainly to the government, but the state has made its position clear that it will not engage in matters of substance at this hearing. So I will ask just one question of the petitioners, and that is, following on Commissioner Abramovich's question, has there been a constitutional challenge to the MCA? And if so, what is the status of that challenge? How far has it got? And at what stage is the challenge pitched?
Seguiríamos el mismo orden, primero los peticionarios y luego el Estado.
Thank you for the questions. We obviously are acknowledge and are grateful for the presence of the state here. We regret, along with the Commission, that the state has chosen not to engage in a substantive debate about these issues. And we would reiterate what the President of the Commission said about the jurisdictional arguments of the United States having been resolved in earlier resolutions within these precautionary measures. I will. The question about status, about unlawful enemy combatant status, was posed to the state, but I'm going to say a quick word about it before allowing Ms. McLean to speak about the rest of the questions. As she mentioned in her presentation, this concept of unlawful enemy combatant conflates various different statuses that do exist in international law. That is, it includes those who would be properly defined as privileged combatants, non-privileged combatants, and civilians under the Geneva Conventions, and people who fall entirely outside of the scope of the Geneva Conventions because they're not in zones of armed conflict, and therefore international human rights law applies to them. I'm just going to read quickly the... We mentioned a report by five UN special mandate holders that was released in 2006. Speaking of this status, the UN observed that the U.S. has recourse to the concepts recently and unilaterally developed by the United States government and not to the existing international humanitarian law regarding belligerency and combat status. The Commission's 2005 resolution as well was very clear on this point in saying that classifying detainees with this status makes it impossible to know what their legal rights are under both domestic and international law, precisely because the concept conflates various different statuses, each of which would require different treatment regarding both detention and fair trial.
Thank you to the distinguished commissioners for the questions that you've posed, and thank you to the state for participating today, and I would like to reiterate our expression of disappointment that you're not going to be more substantively engaging in the questions that are raised by the commissioners and the real continued concerns that we have about the status of the detainees at Guantanamo and the status of Guantanamo as an offshore prison facility that is attempted to be held outside of the reach of domestic and international law. The distinguished commissioner asked about the actions by the United States since 2006. It is a great concern of ours that despite some statements that have been made by different people within the administration and other interested and concerned parties in the United States and outside the United States, that the prison facility at Guantanamo be closed and that Guantanamo detainees either be tried in accordance with fair trial procedures that are required by international law, the United States government seems to be not moving in that direction at any speed. And in fact, more people were transferred in the first 6 months of 2006 than have been transferred in the first 6 months of 2007. And following the Military Commissions Act passage in October of last year, as my colleague said in his initial statement, a number of people have actually been transferred into Guantanamo, which demonstrates that the United States is continuing to recognize that Guantanamo Bay can be maintained as an offshore prison facility for what it classifies as unlawful enemy combatants who would not have any authority to be able to bring any sort of legal challenges if the Military Commissions Act and the jurisdiction stripping provisions within it are maintained. This is obviously something of great concern to us and of great concern to the international community. The distinguished commissioner asked about the source of the information that we've received. First, want to say that we would strongly support any efforts by the commission to be able to visit Guantanamo and see for yourselves what the status is of the detainees there. This is something that has been requested by numerous other bodies, including special rapporteurs of the United Nations, as well as other interested parties over the last five or more years. It is something that lawyers had tried to do from the initial transfer of detainees to Guantanamo in 2002, and it took us 2 years of litigation and significant other forms of pressure before any lawyers were permitted to actually go into Guantanamo and meet with the detainees and see what the facility actually consisted of. Since lawyers have been able to travel to Guantanamo, this is the primary source of information. The detainees themselves and the statements of detainees that have been presented to lawyers for the detainees that are firsthand information about the situation at Guantanamo, which is essentially the only real firsthand information that exists beyond the statements of the United States government. We've seen the image of Guantanamo changed dramatically once some of the statements have come out about the current state of affairs in Guantanamo coming from the detainees themselves. In the earliest days of Guantanamo, there were numerous statements that were made about the Guantanamo detainees being the worst of the worst. And what we have seen from further interactions with detainees, from the statements that have come out of even the government's own administrative tribunals, that many of these detainees were picked up wrongly, the allegations that the United States makes against many of the detainees do not amount to war crimes, and for many of them do not even amount to for many of them are it's clear from the administrative tribunals that exist at Guantanamo that the claims are baseless. So we fully support the formalization of your visit request and encourage the United States to allow the commissioners to actually visit Guantanamo and have an objective account. The source of the information is at this point primarily the information that the firsthand information that's received, as well as the statements that have been made by the United States where that information is helpful. And as the Center for Constitutional Rights, we represent in habeas petitions as co-counsel over 300 detainees who are either currently at Guantanamo or who have been released from Guantanamo. So much of our information comes from the network of lawyers who have been regularly visiting the base where that has been permitted and through significant challenges by the United States government in the attempts to visit the Guantanamo detainees. The commissioner had asked about the alleged suicide, which is something that is, of course, of great concern to us. This was a recent death at Guantanamo, but it was not the first one, as the commission surely knows, and as the commission has responded to in prior statements. This is the fourth death at Guantanamo, with statements, assertions by the United States that each of these deaths has been a suicide, but unfortunately, the United States has not provided even the most basic information to lawyers for the detainees of the detainees who have died, or the family members even of the detainees who've died, that would support the claims that they're suicide. It's not that we would say that they're definitively not suicides, but this is a great concern for us that the United States has not allowed an independent investigation into the deaths at Guantanamo and has not done a comprehensive investigation and released the results of that comprehensive investigation to clear up information and to understand how best to respond to the situation at Guantanamo as it currently exists. Commissioner Roberts had asked about the combination of questions about the scope of habeas following the legislation and a constitutional challenge to the Military Commissions Act. The Military Commissions Act legislation explicitly aims to retroactively strip the Guantanamo detainees of the right to bring habeas challenges in federal courts in the United States. This aims to do it retroactively following the decision in Hamdan that the Detainee Treatment Act was ineffective in removing the right of Guantanamo detainees to bring habeas challenges in federal court. The Circuit Court in the United States, the Federal Appellate Court in the District of Columbia, in earlier this year, in February of 2007, upheld the Military Commissions Act's jurisdiction stripping provisions, which led to the dismissal of a number of habeas petitions in the district court. This is currently there's a petition for certiorari has been granted in the Supreme Court, and we expect to raise these issues again in the latter part of this year before the Supreme Court. This is a great concern for us that this is right now we are more than 3 years after the Supreme Court in Rasul v. Bush held that Guantanamo detainees have a right to bring a habeas challenge in federal court. This is, as the Commission has recognized in prior communications, habeas is intended to be a speedy and effective remedy. We're now talking about 5.5 years that a number of men, many of these men, have been detained at Guantanamo, and over 3 years since the Supreme Court has held that Guantanamo detainees have a right to challenge the legality of their detention. And we've still not seen habeas corpus remedy enacted in a single one of the cases of the Guantanamo detainees that have been raised. Thank you.
Por favor, el gobierno de Estados Unidos.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I just wanted to ask a procedural question. Could you please clarify the last question that you asked, sir? It wasn't entirely clear to us.
Sí, con mucho gusto. Dado que no tenemos hasta ahora acceso directo al terreno, y por eso estamos gestionando esta visita, y vamos a gestionar esta visita, no tenemos duda que con este apoyo que ustedes han reiterado, el gobierno de Estados Unidos se va a manifestar precisamente en el otorgamiento de la anuencia para visitar Guantánamo. y corroborar estas informaciones que nos llegan por distintas fuentes, no directas. Pedíamos información sobre la situación de aproximadamente 80 personas que actualmente se ha establecido que no existe ningún motivo para su detención y que estarían en una especie de limbo, jurídicamente hablando, y humanitariamente hablando también, una especie de limbo porque nadie lo recibe o existiría el riesgo de trasladarlos a un país que presumiblemente podrían ser víctimas de tortura o de tratos crueles. Y precisamente por eso acogemos el pedido de los peticionarios y vamos a hacer las gestiones humanitarias que estén a nuestro alcance para exhortar a los gobiernos, a los estados de las Américas, a efecto de que en su oportunidad puedan ser receptivos a las personas para ser trasladadas o repatriadas a los países de las Américas. Es precisamente esta pregunta concreta, estas 80 personas que están en esta especie de limbo jurídico, que no existe ningún motivo y que aún permanecerían detenidas en Guantánamo. ¿Qué pasa con estas personas? Esa es la pregunta.
Thank you, distinguished commissioners, and thank you again to the petitioners. As we stated earlier, we will not be able to provide substantive answers at this time to the questions that the distinguished commission has asked the United States, but we have taken very careful note of these questions and will return them to our capital. I did want to note that, Mr. President, your comments about support for the commission are duly noted. We do understand that support for the commission goes beyond words and goes beyond money. It goes to support for support of all kinds for the commission, and we do. The position of the United States is one that is taken in great seriousness, one that was carefully considered with all the obligations that the United States has taken under the Charter of the Organization of American States and all of the instruments to which we are party. So I did just want to say that I appreciate your words, and we do take sentiments like that very seriously. Because I understand there are about 10 minutes left in this hearing, we would be glad to cede that time to the commission or to the petitioners for any additional comments that you would like to make, of which we will take careful note as well. Thank you.
Sí, muchas gracias. Comisionado Víctor Abramovich también quiere hacer algunas ampliaciones.
Simplemente para ampliar algunas de las preguntas y cuestiones que fueron formuladas. El presidente mencionaba el tema de 80 personas que estarían aún detenidas en la cárcel de Guantánamo, pese a que se ha declarado que no existen obligación, al menos en términos legales, de mantenerlas en detención, y aparentemente por una cuestión de imposibilidad de ser devueltas a sus países de origen. En la presentación que hicieron los peticionarios se habló de un universo, creo haber entendido, de 48 personas liberadas de la cárcel de Guantánamo, pero que siguen todavía en detención, precisamente por el tema de la imposibilidad de devolución a sus países de origen, pero también se ha hablado de casos de personas que han sido devueltas a sus países de origen, pese a que esa devolución podría implicar un riesgo para su vida y su integridad física y una violación del principio de no devolución. Me gustaría tener un poco más de precisión sobre estos tres universos, o sea, personas detenidas, pese a que se ha declarado que no existen motivos para esa detención, aún estando en la cárcel de Guantánamo, personas liberadas, pero que están en este proceso de determinación de si van a ser devueltas a sus países de origen o van a recibir refugio en los Estados Unidos o van a ser enviados a un tercer país, y cantidad de personas que han sido enviadas a sus países de origen, pese a que eso pueda haber puesto en riesgo su vida y su integridad física. Esto me parece importante teniendo en cuenta el planteo de ampliación de medidas cautelares. La segunda pregunta tiene que ver con los casos de presuntos suicidios. Me gustaría conocer, tanto de parte de los peticionarios como de parte del Estado, si existen actualmente investigaciones en curso vinculadas con estos casos, y si existen normas o procedimientos para casos de suicidios en centros de detención federales, y si esos procedimientos son los que en su caso se están siguiendo en relación con las personas que presuntamente se han suicidado en el centro de detención de Guantánamo.
Tenemos un máximo de 6 minutos, por favor.
Thank you, distinguished commissioners. I just want to clarify with regard to the question that you raised about the 80 individuals who have been cleared for release. The question as you posed it was, what is the status of these people where there is no legal reason to detain them? It is our position that there is no legal reason to detain the nearly 400, over 350 people who are detained at Guantanamo. The statement that these individuals are cleared for release is a statement that has been made by a procedurally inadequate tribunal at Guantanamo, Administrative Review Board tribunals. It is significant that these tribunals have made this statement about these individual detainees, and they still remain at Guantanamo, some many months and some years after they have been classified as being cleared for release and no longer a security threat or not a security threat to the United States or any other country. Some of these 80 individuals cannot be returned to their home country, or we assert that they cannot be returned to their home country, and the individuals assert that they cannot be returned to their home country because of concerns for their life and their safety. But a number of them have not been returned to their home country, not because of that reason, but because of other issues that exist between the United States and the country of repatriation, of which we're not privy to. We've strongly advocated for a speedy return of many of these individuals, and the United States has significantly delayed the return for no reason that is apparent to us. For those people who have continued to be detained at Guantanamo, where we are concerned that they cannot be repatriated to their home country because of fear or fear of torture or persecution, we have, as lawyers for detainees, have taken great efforts to try to find ways for them to be returned to liberty in countries in which they would not be facing persecution. This is an issue that the United States needs to pay much greater attention to, and make much greater efforts to try to find countries of refuge or to accept these detainees in the United States when they've been cleared for release. And for those individuals who've been returned to the countries of origin despite great risk to their life, many of them continue to be detained. For some of them, in conditions of which we do not have privy to information about the conditions of their detention, and the United States has not taken efforts beyond receiving specific assurances prior to the transfer of these individuals that they would not be persecuted in their home country. Is our understanding that they have not taken significant efforts after the transfer of these individuals to ensure that they're not facing persecution, to investigate the conditions of their detention or their eventual release or the possibility of their eventual release, and to ensure that they're in safety when they've been transferred to a human rights abusing regime. In regard to the question of the alleged suicides, there was a recent Freedom of Information Act request that was made to try to secure information about the deaths at Guantanamo that occurred over a year ago in June of 2006. And the United States' response to that was, there's an investigation that is still ongoing. In response to a request by this distinguished commission to provide additional information to the commission, immediate information information to the commission about the deaths that occurred in Guantanamo. The United States waited many months before providing a response to the commission, and in its eventual response to the commission, the United States provided essentially press releases, statements that were made on talk shows and such, without providing any more thorough or comprehensive information about the deaths. This is a great concern to us and is obviously a great concern to the families of the deceased and to others who continue to be detained in Guantanamo. It's something where we strongly encourage an investigation, and especially an independent investigation if that could occur. We assert that it definitively can, and for that information to be released publicly. Thank you.
Bueno, les agradecemos a los peticionarios, a las instituciones aquí representadas, como también a los representantes del ilustrado gobierno de los Estados Unidos por haber participado en esta audiencia. No tengo duda de que el gobierno de Estados Unidos, con esta reiteración de apoyo para la Comisión Interamericana, va a alcanzar por escrito la información que tenga bien alcanzarle a la Comisión y que ha sido solicitada en esta audiencia. Concluimos esta audiencia y muchas gracias por su participación.